now part three of The Scarlet Pimpernel by Baroness Ortsey, read by Damian Lewis. Marguerite St. Just, Lady Blakeney, has refused to help Chauvelin find the Scarlet Pimpernel. But the wily French agent has evidence that Marguerite's brother, Armand, is a traitor to France, and he seeks another meeting with her. Lord Grenville's Ball.
It was a gala night at Covent Garden Theatre, the first of the autumn season in this memorable year of 1792. Monsieur Chauvelin sat with his pale eyes fixed upon a box, where Marguerite Blakeney had just entered, accompanied by her husband. Sir Percy stayed beside her just as long as convention demanded, then strolled away. Chauvelin, waiting for his opportunity, slipped quietly into her box.
"A word with you, citoyenne," he said quietly.
"Ludman, you frightened me," said Marguerite with a forced laugh which was not entirely feigned. "Your presence is inopportune. I have no mind for talking."
"I think you would be wise to listen to me, citoyenne Saint-Just. The day on which I had the honour of meeting you at Dover, and less than an hour after I had your final answer, I obtained possession of some papers which revealed another of those subtle schemes for the escape of a group of French aristocrats, that traitor de Tournay amongst others, all organized by the Scarlet Pimpernel."
Marguerite shrugged her shoulders and said, "Have I not already told you that I care not about your schemes or about the Scarlet Pimpernel?"
"A little patience, I entreat you, citoyenne," he continued imperturbably. "Two gentlemen, Lord Anthony Dewhurst and Sir Andrew Ffoulkes, were at the Fisherman's Rest at Dover that same night.
I know, I saw them there.
They were already known to my spies as members of that accursed league. When the two young men were alone in the coffee room, my spies overpowered them, seized their papers and brought them to me. Among them was a letter to Sir Andrew Ffoulkes, written by your brother."
In a moment, Marguerite had guessed the danger.
"That the letter shows him to be not only in sympathy with the enemies of France, but actually a helper, if not a member, of the League of the Scarlet Pimpernel. Let me make my point clear, citoyenne," said Chauvelin. "Saint-Just is compromised beyond the slightest hope of pardon."
Inside the box, all was silent for a moment or two.
"And so, Chauvelin," said Marguerite Blakeney at last, "you would now force me to do some spying for you in exchange for my brother Armand's safety. That is your intention, is it not?"
"My intention is that you yourself win the free pardon for Armand Saint-Just by doing me a small service."
"What is it?"
"Watch for me tonight, citoyenne Saint-Just," he said eagerly. "Listen. Among the papers which were found about the person of Sir Andrew Ffoulkes, there was a tiny note. See," he added, taking a scrap of paper from his pocketbook and handing it to her.
There were only two lines, written in a distorted, evidently disguised handwriting. She read them half aloud.
"You have all instructions for the second. If you wish to speak to me again, I shall be at G's ball. There is a device here in the corner, a small red flower."
"Yes."
"The Scarlet Pimpernel," she said.
"And G's ball means Grenville's ball. He will be at the ball tonight." "That is how I interpret the note, citoyenne," concluded Chauvelin blandly. "Lord Anthony Dewhurst and Sir Andrew Ffoulkes remained prisoners until this morning, but having found this tiny scrap of paper, my intention was that they should be in London in time to attend Lord Grenville's ball. Therefore, this morning, those two young gallants found the doors unlocked, their jailers disappeared. I have not seen them yet, but I think we may safely conclude that they did not draw rein until they reached London."
"What do you want me to do, Chauvelin?" Marguerite said, with a world of despair in her voice.
"You are going to the ball. Watch for me there, citoyenne. You can note everyone to whom Sir Andrew Ffoulkes or Lord Antony Dewhurst speaks. You are beyond suspicion. The Scarlet Pimpernel will be at Lord Grenville's ball tonight. Find out who he is, and I will pledge the word of France that your brother shall be safe.
If I promise to help you in this matter, Chauvelin, she said, will you give me that letter of Saint-Just's?
If you render me useful service tonight, citoyenne, he replied with a sarcastic smile, I will give you that letter tomorrow.
I may be powerless to help you, she pleaded, were I ever so willing.
That would be terrible indeed, he said quietly, for you and for Saint-Just.
Marguerite shuddered. She felt lonely, frightened for Armand. Chauvelin was taking no further notice of her. He had said his cruel either-or and left her to decide. He now appeared to be absorbed in the music. A discreet rap at the door roused Marguerite from her thoughts. It was Sir Percy Blakeney. "Your chair's outside, my dear," he said. "I suppose you'll want to go to that damned ball." "Excuse me, Monsieur Chauvelin, I had not observed you." He extended two slender, white fingers towards Chauvelin, who had risen when Sir Percy entered the box. "Are you coming, my dear?"
"I am ready to go," she said, taking his arm. At the door of the box she turned and looked straight at Chauvelin. "It is only au revoir, Chauvelin," she said pleasantly. "We shall meet at Lord Grenville's ball anon."
The historic ball given by Lord Grenville, then the Secretary of State for Foreign Affairs, was the most brilliant function of the year. At 10 o'clock, the grand rooms of the Foreign Office, exquisitely decorated with exotic palms and flowers, were filled to overflowing, and the dainty strains of the minuet made a soft accompaniment to the chatter of the brilliant company. Marguerite suffered intensely. Though she laughed and chatted, she felt like one condemned to death. During that brief hour which she had spent alone in her husband's company between the opera and the ball, a small ray of hope had arisen that she might find in this good-natured, lazy individual a friend and adviser, but it had vanished as quickly as it had come. Now Sir Percy stood surrounded by a crowd of empty-headed young fops, who were repeating from mouth to mouth and with every sign of the keenest enjoyment a doggerel quatrain which he had just given forth. "We seek him here, we seek him there, those Frenchies seek him everywhere. Is he in heaven? Is he in hell? That damned elusive Pimpernel!" Sir Percy's bon mot had gone the round of the brilliant reception rooms. The Prince of Wales was enchanted. He vowed that life without Blakeney would be but a dreary desert, then, taking him by the arm, had led him to the card room and engaged him in a long game of hazard. Marguerite caught sight of Sir Andrew Ffoulkes and Lord Antony Dewhurst, who seemingly had just arrived. Both the young men looked a little haggard and anxious, but there was not the slightest sign of the catastrophe they must have felt hovering round them and their leader. Marguerite began to wonder, as she looked at the brilliant and fashionable in the gaily lighted ballroom, which of these worldly men round her was the Scarlet Pimpernel. A burning curiosity seized her to know him. Could it be Sir Andrew Ffoulkes? Marguerite watched him as he strolled towards a doorway, which led to a boudoir beyond, then paused and leaned against the framework of it, looking anxiously all around him. She skirted the fashionable crowd, drawing nearer to Sir Andrew. Suddenly she paused. She had distinctly seen that Lord Hastings, a friend of her husband's and one of the prince's set, had, as he quickly brushed past Sir Andrew, slipped something into his hand. Marguerite resumed her walk across the room towards the doorway, whence Sir Andrew had now disappeared. When she reached the deserted boudoir, he was standing with his back to her and close to a table upon which stood a massive silver candelabra. A slip of paper was in his hand, which he was in the very act of reading. At that moment, he looked round and saw her. She uttered a groan, passed her hand across her forehead, and murmured faintly, "Oh, the heat in the room was terrible. I felt so faint. She tottered, almost as if she would fall, and Sir Andrew, quickly recovering himself and crumpling in his hand the tiny note he had been reading, was only apparently just in time to support her. "You are ill, Lady Blakeney?" he asked, with much concern. "Let me—"
"No, no, nothing," she interrupted quickly. "A chair! Quick!"
She sank into a chair close to the table and closed her eyes.
"Ah, there," she murmured, still faintly. "The giddiness is passing off. Do not heed me, Sir Andrew, I assure you. I already feel better."
At moments like these, there is no doubt that there is in us a sense which has absolutely nothing to do with the other five. Marguerite could not see, for her eyes were closed. She could not hear for the noise from the ballroom. Nevertheless, she knew, as if she had both seen and heard, that Sir Andrew was even now holding the paper to the flame of one of the candles. At the exact moment that it began to catch fire, she opened her eyes, jumped to her feet, and with two dainty fingers snatched the burning scrap of paper from the young man's hand. Then she blew out the flame and held the paper to her nostril with perfect unconcern.
"How thoughtful of you, Sir Andrew," she said gaily. "Surely 'twas your grandmother who taught you that the smell of burnt paper was a sovereign remedy against giddiness."
Sir Andrew was staring at her, too dazed for the moment to realize what had actually happened. Tumultuous thoughts rushed through his mind. He suddenly remembered her nationality and, worst of all, recollected that tale about the Marquis de Saint-Cyr. Not caring whether his action was one that would be styled ill-bred towards a lady, the young man had made a bold dash for the note. But Marguerite's thoughts flew quicker than his. She took a quick step backwards and knocked over the small Sheraton table, which was already top-heavy, and which fell down with a crash together with the massive candelabra upon it. She gave a quick cry of alarm.
"The candles! Sir Andrew!"
Sir Andrew quickly and dexterously put out the flames and replaced the candelabra upon the table. But this had taken him a few seconds to do, and those seconds had been all that Marguerite needed to glance at the paper and note its contents. When Sir Andrew once more looked at her, he only saw upon her face alarm at the untoward accident and relief at its happy issue, whilst the note had apparently fluttered to the ground. The young man picked it up, and he looked much relieved as his fingers closed tightly over it.
"Well, well, Sir Andrew, I do believe it was Cupid himself who stood by you and threatened the entire Foreign Office with destruction by fire, just on purpose to make me drop love's message before it had been polluted by my indiscreet eyes. To think that a moment longer, and I might have known the secrets of an erring duchess. Burn your love token by all means."
Sir Andrew twisted the paper into a long spill and held it once again to the candle. He watched the fateful note as it curled under the flame. Soon the last fragment fell on the floor, and he placed his heel upon the ashes. The few words which Marguerite Blakeney had managed to read on the half-scorched piece of paper seemed literally to be the words of fate. "Start myself tomorrow, and if you wish to speak to me again, I shall be in the supper room at 1 o'clock precisely." The whole was signed with the hastily scrawled little device, a tiny star-shaped flower which had become so familiar to her. 1 o'clock precisely. It was now close upon 11. In 2 hours she must make up her mind whether she will leave her brother to his fate, or whether she will wilfully betray a brave man whose life was devoted to his fellow men.
Damian Lewis was reading part 3 of The Scarlet Pimpernel by Baroness Ortsey. The book is abridged by Sarah Kilgareth and is a CSA Word production for BBC Radio 2 by Clive Stanhope. Next week, Marguerite decides whether to sacrifice her brother or the heroic Scarlet Pimpernel.